And this is VOA 1, The Hits.
Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners. So we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
Today on the program, you will hear from Anna Mateo and John Russell. Later, we will present our American history series, The Making of a Nation. But first,
Yoshio Kinoshita of Japan is not letting his age stop him from learning new tricks on a skateboard. Almost every morning, the 81-year-old Kinoshita rides at his local skate park in the city of Osaka. He gets helpful information on how to improve from skateboarders who are many years younger than he is. "They are all my teachers," said Kinoshita. "At first, I was holding on to the railing," he said. But he soon learned to make a 180-degree turn and other tricks. Before he retired, Kinoshita worked in the building industry. He still works part-time as an attendant in a bicycle parking area. Kinoshita began skateboarding only 2 years ago. He bought a board he saw at a market selling unclaimed goods left on the railway. The decision to buy a skateboard changed Kinoshita's life. Japan has the most aged people in the world. More than 35% of its population is expected to be 65 or over by the year 2050. Kinoshita told the Reuters news agency that he thinks skateboarding can help prevent mental decline. "It's a sport with a sense of tension," he said. "Rather than zoning out, I think skateboarding improves the ability to think, even just by a little bit." Kinoshita added, "For old people like me who try to learn new things, if we don't practice it little by little every day, we will forget how to do it immediately. That's why I think I have to come here and practice every day." Kinoshita has 2 children and 2 grandchildren. He said he watched in wonder at the skateboarders who competed in the recent Tokyo Olympics. All 3 medalists in the women's street skateboarding competition at the Games were between the ages of 13 and 19. That includes Japan's own gold medalist, 13-year-old Momiji Nishiya. "They are really incredible," said Kinoshita. He added, "To be honest, I can't beat those 5-year-old, 4-year-old, or 3-year-old kids. That's for sure."
Imagine you are preparing to take a flight. As you step onto the plane, you are greeted by a flight attendant. Now describe the clothes of the female flight attendant. You might say she is wearing a skirt, dressy top, and dressy shoes with heels. That would describe her traditional work clothes or uniform. But on one airline, that is changing. SkyUp Airlines is a privately owned Ukrainian airline. It recently decided to put an end to heels and form-fitting skirts for their female flight attendants. Now the women will wear white Nike sneakers. And their uniform will be a loose-fitting suit with an orange jacket, orange pants, and a white t-shirt. The suit and t-shirt are both made by Ukrainian clothing companies. The airline made this change after hearing comments from the flight attendants about their uniform. One of them is Alexandrina Denyensenko. Denyensenko says that during a flight, she sometimes does not sit down, not even for a minute. After standing so much and while wearing high heels, her legs and feet hurt. She said to wear comfortable shoes is like a dream come true. While she says that heels look beautiful, feet suffer and swell by the end of the flight. And, she told Reuters, sneakers are absolutely cool. The company said they researched the history of cabin crew uniforms. They decided to get rid of what they called conservative parts of a flight attendant's look. The airline has turned the traditional and conservative uniform into something modern and sporty. But the changes are not only about style and comfort. There are safety issues to consider as well. Denyensenko said that in the event of an emergency water landing, the crew would have to evacuate the plane on inflatable equipment. Heels can damage that equipment. And she adds, it won't be very comfortable to swim in a skirt. Some people may not realize something. The job of a flight attendant is physically demanding. The website IllinoisWorkNet.com says that flight attendants must stand for long periods of time. Do the same movements over and over, such as lifting heavy bags onto overhead storage. Push a heavy service cart and serve passengers food and drinks, sometimes while keeping balance during an unsteady flight. Work in a pressurized area. Breathe recycled air for long periods of time, and manage a lack of regular sleep. The head of the SkyUp Airlines marketing department is Mariana Gregorish. She told Reuters the image of the female flight attendant is very romanticized. People may think it is an easy job, but in fact, she said, their job demands a lot of physical training. The company also plans to launch a new uniform for male crew. They will wear a light suit and a t-shirt. Their Nike sneakers will be black. The new uniforms will be officially launched on October 22nd, 2021. I'm Anna Mateo.
the end of The Remains of the Day, a famous book by Katsuo Ishiguro, one of the characters says the following words.
The evening's the best part of the day. You've done your day's work. Now you can put your feet up and enjoy it.
In today's Everyday Grammar, we will explore the connection between grammar and evening time. You will learn about how to describe your favorite part of the day and common evening activities. Let's start with a few important terms and ideas. Adjectives describe people or things. Think of words like old or big. You might describe someone as an old friend. You might describe a structure as a big building. But when English speakers use adjectives to compare people or things, something happens. These adjectives take on a comparative form and are often followed by the word than. So, old becomes older, big becomes bigger. Here is an example.
Bob is older than Jim.
English has adjectives that are irregular in the comparative form. Good is one of these adjectives. In comparisons, good becomes better, as in
Bob is better than Jim.
Sometimes you might want to compare many things. One of those things is at the top. You could use a form known as the superlative. Superlatives often have an EST ending, as in oldest or biggest. Once again, English has adjectives that are irregular in the superlative form. One of these adjectives, good, becomes best. That is how we arrive at a statement such as,
"The evening's the best part of the day."
This statement is comparing a group of things, times of the day. These times might include morning, afternoon, evening, and night. English speakers use certain verbs and verb forms to describe common evening activities. Common examples include watch, listen to, play, or talk to. For example, people might watch television in the evening, or they might listen to music or listen to the radio. They might play sports, football, basketball, tennis, or cricket. They might even talk to friends or talk to family. English speakers also use expressions, phrasal verbs, and different kinds of idioms to describe evening activities. For example, people might run errands after work or run errands after school. An errand is a short trip you take to get something or do something. But it generally does not involve running. You could run errands in a car, by bus, or by bike. And when you run errands, you might pick up things or people. In this case, the phrasal verb pick up means to go out in order to bring back someone or something. You could pick up food or pick up your brother from school, for example. In today's report, we explored some ideas about comparisons and common evening activities. Take what you have learned and ask yourself some questions. What is your favorite part of the day? Do you agree that evening is the best time of the day? What common activities do you like to do in the evening? Write in the comments section of our website, learningenglish.voanews.com. I'm John Russell.
To help protect yourself against the new coronavirus, wash your hands for 20 seconds with soap and water before you eat, after using the toilet, and after touching anything many other people touch, like a seat on a public bus. If you cannot wash your hands with soap and water, use an alcohol-based hand sanitizer that contains at least 60% alcohol. Taking these steps can help prevent not only the new coronavirus disease, but also colds, flu, and other viruses. For more information, visit the following websites: the World Health Organization at www.who.int, or the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention at www.cdc.gov.
Welcome to The Making of a Nation, American History in VOA Special English. In the 1820s, in the state of New York, a man named Joseph Smith started the Mormon religion. Smith based it on what he said were God's words to the ancient people of America. Many people became members of the new church. Others, however, laughed at some of the beliefs of the Mormons. This led to trouble. Smith had to move his people many times. For a while, they settled in the state of Illinois, in a town they built and called Nauvoo. The church split when Joseph Smith said that Mormons could have more than one wife. The split led to violence and public opposition to the Mormons. Smith was arrested and put in jail. A mob attacked the jail and killed Smith and his brother. The governor of Illinois ordered the Mormons to leave the state. Sarah Long and Richard Rail discuss relations between the Mormons and the federal government.
Brigham Young became the new leader of the Mormons. He told his people that he had seen their new home in a dream. He said it was a wide, beautiful valley in the west. He said he would recognize it when he saw it. The Mormons left Illinois in the spring of 1846. There were more than 15,000 people and many wagons and farm animals. The trip west was hard. Many of the people died. After months of slow travel, they stopped to make their winter camp.
Explorers visited the camp. They told Brigham Young about a great salt lake in a wide valley on the western side of the Rocky Mountains. From the way they described it, Young believed it was the valley of his dream. He started to move his people toward the Great Salt Lake as soon as the winter snows melted. They arrived in the summer of 1847. Brigham Young looked out over the valley. "This," he said, "is the right place."
The Mormons wasted no time. 2 hours after arriving, they began to prepare the ground for planting. The lake water was too salty to use, so they built a system of canals to bring water down from the mountains. The first few years were difficult. Cold weather and insects destroyed their crops. Yet the Mormons continued to work hard to make their settlement a success. They refused to think of leaving.
At first, the Mormons were ruled only by the laws of their church and by their leader. Then gold was discovered in California. many non-Mormons passed through the Salt Lake area on their way to the gold fields. Some of them stayed. It soon became clear that new laws were needed to govern the growing population. The Mormons asked Congress to approve a territorial government for their land. They called the land Deseret. That was a Mormon word meaning honeybee. The Mormons claimed a large area. It stretched from the mountains of Colorado west to the mountains of California, from Arizona north to Oregon.
Congress rejected the large claim of Deseret and made it a much smaller territory. It also refused to accept the name Deseret. Instead, Congress called it Utah, after the Ute tribe of Native American Indians that lived there. As a compromise, Brigham Young was named governor of the new Utah Territory. Most of the new territorial officials were Mormons, too. Four were not Mormon.
Governing the territory would not be easy. There were disputes during the administrations of several American presidents. As a result of one dispute, the four non-Mormon officials returned to Washington. The Mormons then formed their own territorial government with a legislature and courts. Other federal officials were sent to Utah. Some of them were not prepared for the job. Usually, they did not stay long.
Some of the officials made many charges against Brigham Young and other Mormon leaders. They said Mormons refused to recognize the power of the federal government. They said Mormons put the words of Young above the laws of Congress. They said the church had a secret organization to take the lives and property of those who questioned the power of the church. There were charges that Mormons had burned the papers of the Supreme Court of the territory. And there were charges that Mormons were responsible for Indian attacks on some officials. President Franklin Pierce decided he should make someone else governor of Utah. The man he chose, however, did not want the job. Instead, he urged the president to let Brigham Young remain. President Pierce agreed.
Relations between the Mormons and the government did not improve in the next 3 years. Territorial officials resigned. They charged that the Mormons were in open rebellion against the federal government. The next president, James Buchanan, dismissed Brigham Young as governor. He ordered more than 1,000 soldiers to go to Utah to put down the rebellion. He also sent a new governor, Alfred Cumming, with the soldiers. The Mormons prepared to fight. A small group of Mormon men attacked and destroyed the army's supply wagons. They forced the soldiers to stop for the winter before reaching the Salt Lake Valley. The soldiers could do nothing until spring.
In Washington, efforts were made to settle the dispute. A man named Thomas Kane asked President Buchanan to let him go to Utah. Kane was an old friend of the president. He also was a friend of the Mormons. He had spent much time with them during their long trip to Utah 10 years earlier. Cain feared what might happen to his Mormon friends if fighting started. He told President Buchanan that he did not want a job or money. He only wanted a chance to be useful. The president agreed to let him try to settle the dispute.
Thomas Cain arrived in Salt Lake City, the territorial capital, early in 1858. He found that the Mormons had decided not to fight. Instead, they were preparing to search for a new home. They talked of moving to Mexico, or perhaps to an island in the South Pacific. Cain talked with Brigham Young. Then he went to the army camp to talk with Governor Cumming. The governor agreed to go to Salt Lake City with Cain. The two men went alone, without any soldiers.
The Mormons welcomed Cumming, but continued their preparations to leave. Cumming called a public meeting. He said he was in Utah to represent the federal government. He said he was there to make sure the people of the territory obeyed the Constitution and the laws of the United States. He said he would not use military force until every other way had failed. Above all, said Cumming, he would not interfere with the Mormon religion. He urged the Mormons not to leave the land they had worked so hard to build. Brigham Young agreed to stay.
Governor Cumming returned to the army camp. He told the commander that the Mormons had accepted him. He said, military force would not be needed. A few days later, two representatives of President Buchanan arrived. They brought news that the president would not act against Mormons who accepted the rule of the United States government. Brigham Young and the other Mormon leaders made a statement. They said, they wished to live in peace under the Constitution and the laws of the United States. The dispute was over. Brigham Young continued to lead the Mormon Church, but the governor ruled the territorial government. The two jobs were separate and would remain that way.
Congressional elections were held in the United States in 1858. One political race created national interest. It was for one of the two Senate seats representing the state of Illinois. The candidate of the Democratic Party was Stephen Douglas. He was running for re-election. His opponent was a lawyer and a member of the Republican Party. His name was Abraham Lincoln. That will be our story next time.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.